I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to welcome everybody tonight. Next on the agenda is roll call for the council, and we have everybody here tonight. And then is citizen input. If there's any citizens here that would like to address the council, you have up to 5 minutes. If you'll raise your hand, I'll acknowledge you, and you can come up to the podium right here and state your name and address for the record for us. And you have 5 minutes to address the council. Okay, since we didn't have any hands raised, we'll move on to the next item. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Who is that? Dan first?
Second.
Mark Snyder second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Thank you. Consent agenda. Do I hear a motion for that?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Ken Johnson first.
Second.
Dan Deamer second. Any discussion on the consent agenda? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Okay. Oh, there we are, okay. Okay.
Back in January, or December 16th, we try to recognize a volunteer in our community. The city recognizes volunteers, and one of the things we really realize in our in a community like this is the volunteers play a very, very important part in our lifestyle. The things we enjoy, like parades, the Spokane for the Adams County Fair, all these different things that we get to have the benefit of enjoying. We had a 100-year anniversary this year, centennial. That was a lot of fun. Those I got to enjoy it. So we'd like to have Janelle come up here. Again, we're going to try this back for the second time. So thank you for coming in. I'll just read a little bit about her. We're recognizing Janelle for her volunteer work with the Chamber of Commerce. Janelle has more irons in the fire than most blacksmiths. She is the wife of a mother of five, homeschool mom, business owner.
Okay. They're online public school, because I think online homeschool moms actually do a lot more work than I do. So it is an online public school. Yeah. So I don't want to take any credit away from those moms that work really hard doing homeschool.
You're still homeschooling. homeschool mother, business owner, 4-H club leader, and a chamber president. So we just really wanted to thank her for her efforts. I wanted to give her a plaque for all that she's done, for recognition, grab that. And we have so many people in the community that we did not recognize that hopefully in the future we get more and more of them. But Janelle, thank you very much for all your work. Okay, we'll go to number two on the agenda. I forgot what it's called. Let me grab that real quick. We'd like to recognize one more person, professional services recognition. We'd like to get Jim up here for a minute. Jim's been our attorney for the city for 16 years. I couldn't believe that when I found that out. So we never recognized him for his faithfulness to our community and for the legal advice he's given us and help keep us out of trouble. Of course, we'd probably be in trouble if it wasn't for that. But we'd like to thank Jim for his 16 years, and here we go.
Public hearing on the community development and housing needs. Before we start that, is there anybody here that needs an interpreter? We have somebody here that can interpret for you. John White in the back. You want to say that out for us, John?
Antes de empezar la reunión, quieren saber si hay alguien que no habla inglés que sea que necesite intérprete. Si es que sí, yo le Okay, are you hugging the seat and everything? I don't think you know. It doesn't look like there is
a... Nobody? Okay. Well, thanks, John, for coming. We appreciate that. So, as soon as I get this up here, find it. There it is. Okay. Okay. Please bear with us as we proceed through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. Okay. This public hearing is now open at 7:09 p.m. and is to receive a staff report and public comments on the community development and housing needs. Inform citizens of the availability of funds and eligibility uses of the State Community Development Block Grant. And receive comments on proposed activities, particularly from low to moderate income persons and persons residing in the West Moon Street area. The public hearing is required by state law, and I will now ask for our staff report. And I believe that's Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. Nice to see you all again. If you might recall, last fall, we brought this project to Council to discuss improving or having sewer available in the West Moon Street area. This area is bounded by SR 26 on the north, roughly SR 24, or just to the west of SR 24 on the east, the main canal on the west, and basically farm ground to the south. It's an area that has approximately 50 homes in it that some of them are now served and discharged directly to raw sewage to a lagoon. The property owners in the area have been approached by Department of Ecology and Adams County to see if they can arrange or work with the city to discharge into the city sewer system. Unfortunately, the city does not have sewer near the area except for what's being planned now for the SR 24 improvements, which will tie into the city system north of Highway 26 and west of Broadway. So we've had a few meetings with Ed McCann and some of the neighbors in the area with Adams County city staff, and the project would be to install sanitary sewer mains throughout the Moon Street area, eliminating the lagoon to the benefit or at the request of the Department of Ecology, tie those or that area into the city sewer system, and build part of the sewer system that would be necessary in order to sewer the SR 24 area that we've had planned now and designed for the last year or so. The Community Development Block Grant Program is actually a federal program that funds projects for low to moderate incomes in the state. It's a part of the Department of Commerce. They have $13 million available for utility projects similar to this, and they have a competitive application process which is due about the end of next week. So we've been working with the city to complete the application. We'll have it done and in to the Department of Commerce by next week. There are two handouts available, one in English and one in Spanish, that discusses the Community Development Block Grant Program, CDBG. We're working, as I mentioned, with the staff, Ed McCann, to put together the application. The area itself is quite high in low to moderate income, roughly about 97%, whereas the city itself is slightly over 50%. So we feel we have a very good opportunity to receive the grant. The funding would be a combination of, for CDBG, where we're asking for $920,000. Adams County has pledged $50,000. Landowners have pledged $50,000. And the city has pledged $80,000, which actually was a portion of the Public Works Trust Fund for the design of the SR 24 area. So we're being able to leverage the loan that we received for the design of the SR24 infrastructure for this grant and pledge funds that means the city has no out-of-pocket expense. And if there's any questions, we'd be happy to entertain them.
Okay, thank you. Larry? Okay, now, I will now ask for public testimony. Questions or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone right over here and state your name and address for the record, and I will allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Oh, Sean, okay. You want to come up to the microphone?
Sean Bates, 1156 East Juniper Street here in Othello. My question about this project is, how is the sewage wanting to be discharged? Is it wanting to be gravity feed downhill to someplace, or does it want to be a pump station? That's a nuts and bolts question, but I'd like to know.
The portion of the sewer system that ties into the city's existing collection system will be by gravity, and it's still yet to be determined in the West Moon area how much of the area we can serve by gravity, but we have made arrangements within the grant estimate to include a small lift station, because there will be probably a few areas on the west end of that area that will not be able to serve by gravity. But the intent is to serve as much as possible by gravity.
Okay, thank you, Larry. Is there more? Any more questions by the public out here? Okay. We'll move on. I'll close the public part of the meeting. Does any staff members want to respond or comment to the council comments or questions? Does any council members have comments or questions? Okay, since there's no questions, I will now close the public hearing at 7:16. Okay. Now we'll go to the next one. Resolution to adopt a grievance, or wait a second, we must have to vote on something here, or do we? Look at my page here. That's it, yes, okay. Okay. Resolution to adopt a grievance procedure for the CDBG grant. Larry again.
Thank you. This, along with the next resolution, are both housekeeping items that are required in order to submit a CDBG application. It may look familiar because we have submitted other CDBG apps prior to this for various projects, but they still require another grievance policy for each application.
Okay. Any questions by council? Any citizens' questions for Larry? Okay, do I hear a motion to adopt the resolution creating a grievance procedure required by CDBG? Charles first. Ken Kaler second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? All right, that passes then. Thank you, Larry. Okay, resolution certifying compliance for the CDBG funding application and authorizing the mayor to submit the CDBG application. Larry?
Also a resolution required for the application. As you just stated, it's authorizing the mayor to sign the application and for the city to submit it. And I'd like to point out that there was a slight revision for the copy that was in the original packet. I think it's been updated.
Okay. All the council members aware of that? Yes? Okay. All right. Do I hear a motion to adopt the resolution certifying CDBG compliance?
Motion.
motion.
Second. Ken Johnson first. Mark Snyder second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Okay, 4.6. Let me get this up here real quick. I'll just read a little bit here. Biannually, at the first meeting of the new council, or periodically, the members thereof, by majority vote, may designate one of their numbers as mayor pro tempore or deputy mayor for such period as the council may specify, to serve in the absence or temporary disability of the mayor, or in lieu thereof, the council may as they need may arise, appoint any qualified person to serve as mayor pro tempore in the absence or temporary disability of the mayor. In the event of the extended excused absence or disability of a council member, the remaining members by majority vote may appoint a council member pro tempore to serve during the absence or disability. So we'll just go over you guys. I'm going to call for in a second. The mayor will call for nominations. All nominations should have a second or they die. After all nominations are received, I will call for the vote. And if there's not a majority on the vote, the number of nominations are reduced by either a runoff between the top two or elimination. So I will now open it up for nomination. Ken?
I nominate Ken Johnson.
Okay.
Second.
I have to make pants. Okay, just a second. Can I borrow your pencil? Mm-hmm. Mine disappeared. Okay. Ken Johnson. Okay, we had a first and a second. Do we have another nomination? Oh, that's going to make it easy then. Okay. All right, then do I hear a motion to accept Ken Johnson as the mayor pro tem for a one-year period, since we have five people up for election next year? That work for a good motion? Okay, do we need a first and second? Jim?
No, you have a motion.
Okay, the motion's already done.
There was a motion to nominate, and the nomination was seconded, and there appeared to be no other nominations, and the council may proceed to vote.
Okay. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, ordinance creating OMC 17.70 accessory structures. Daryl.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the Council. For the record, Daryl Jersey, City Planner. You may recall this item has been before you for consideration now for a number of months. It began in the fall of 2010 when we brought before you some discussion in regards to accessory structures and the regulations that currently are in our code, and the ability in some instances to build some extremely large accessory structures under the current code. As a result of that discussion, council requested that we take the matter before the Planning Commission, which we have done. And the Planning Commission spent several meetings over the fall of 2010 reviewing and discussing the matter pertaining to accessory structures. They have developed a recommendation for council consideration. You may recall that we discussed this at a study session very recently in regards to the Planning Commission's recommendations. The Planning Commission in their deliberations, I think, were concerned that the regulations that would be proposed would not be over-regulatory, that they allow for some discretion on the part of the property owner, but at the same time, maintain the character of a residential neighborhood, which I think is what we were all trying to achieve through this process. The Planning Commission also, I think, was concerned in regards to the issue of structures that were less than 120 square feet. And that's kind of an important number because that's where the building code requires a permit. If you're over 120 square feet in terms of the size of the structure, that then kicks you into the requirement of the building code code adopted by the city. For those structures that are less than 120 square feet, they felt it was important to be able to go out and buy those pre-manufactured sheds to be able to put in your backyard and place garden tools and that sort of thing. So The regulations in terms of some of the requirements specifically don't pertain to those structures that are less than 120 square feet. But for those over 120 square feet, there was a desire to maintain that residential character of buildings. And so primarily those regulations are found in Section 3 of the proposed ordinance that's before you for consideration. And I would like to talk just a little bit about Item A of Section 3, because I think in rereading this, sometimes you can be too close to an issue and have to step back sometimes and look at that. It refers to the accessory structure not being in excess of the size of the primary dwelling unit. And in reviewing that, the Planning Commission also wanted to make that the height of the primary building as well. So what I would suggest in this ordinance is that we add after size and height. So it reads, the structure does not exceed the size and height of the primary building. And that really was the intent in the discussion of the Planning Commission. There has also been some additional discussion after the fact of the Planning Commission's recommendation with some council members in regards to limiting the overall size of the structures perhaps to 1,200 square feet. You may want to have that discussion this evening as well, or it may come up from one of your council members at least. That while you don't want them larger than the primary structure, you may want to put a cap on the total size as well, because we have some primary structures that are 3,500 square feet. And that could be a pretty large garage if you're allowing the garages to be as large as 3,000 or 3,500 square feet, in some cases even 4,000 square feet. So that's something you may want to consider. We do have, I believe, the chairman of the Planning Commission with us this evening as well, and if there's any questions in regards to the intent or I think in terms of the discussion that took place, he may be able to appropriately address those as well if you're interested in hearing any response to particular concerns in regards to the recommendation. But we do believe that this meets the intent of the Planning Commission with that recommended adjustment to the height of the structure as well as the overall size. And I'm sure you'll have some additional discussion in regards to the issue of the square footage of the buildings this evening as well. Be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Anybody out in the audience have any questions for Daryl? Just raise your hand and we'll acknowledge you. Okay, council, do you have questions?
I've got one here. As Daryl mentioned there's somebody here that might consider this size limit. You know, like you say, if you got a 3,000 square foot house and you can go ahead and build a 3,000 square foot additional building, I think we're going to extremes here. And I think what we should do is limit it to the size of the house. If it's less than that 1,200 feet, it's okay to go ahead and build your additional structure the size of your house. But you get above that, say you've got a house of 1,500 square feet, you got a two-car garage added to that, you got 2,000 square feet. So you add another 2,000 square foot building, that's more than you need. You take 1,200 square feet, you can put a three-car garage in that. You can also store your motorhome, a 12 by 40 addition to that, and still be within that 1,200 square foot limit. And I think if you get any bigger limit than that, you're no longer a resident. You're outgrown. And that's my personal feeling of this. If we ought to put a cap on that, say 1,200 square feet.
But if you allow, if you can only have that accessory building as high as your house, you got a single story house, and if you want to put a motorhome in there,
you can't.
It's not going to be tall enough.
You might have to adjust the height of it, that's possible. But you've got some houses that are 45 feet high, too, so figure out. You can figure out
the peaks of the ceilings. There's a lot of exceptions to the rule.
The one thing I might point out too is that in any numerical standard in the code, there's a process that you can come to the council and seek relief from that numerical standard. So if under those circumstances, if you had a unique situation where you had a single story house and a larger structure next door, for instance, and you wanted to come to council and ask to have relief from that height restriction. There is a process that will allow for that, but it would have to go through that process, and the council would have final authority in that decision.
So that was my question, because in Part B, it reads here, the city planner shall have the authority to make the final determination if there's an appeal process.
There is. On any administrative determination, there's an appeal, and that deals primarily with the compatibility of the siding issue, the paint color, that sort of thing. But any numerical standard in the code where you have a height restriction or a square footage restriction, that can be brought directly to the council for relief.
Okay. Well, on the size deal, we do have it's 45% of the lot maximum, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
So if you had a 10,000 square foot lot, 4,500 square feet of that lot, the footprint could be structured.
So is there an interest on putting a restriction on the size of the garage by the council that Ken just shared?
That's covered pretty much under the 45%.
Correct.
So I have no problem with that.
any exceptions will have to come back.
Okay. So that's not an issue then?
Well, sometimes when you've got lot, say you've got two lots on a corner lot or whatever, and you put an additional accessory building on that, you can have a 4,000 or 5,000 square foot building on there. Still have plenty of access, which oversizes. I mean, if you've got a house that's 4,000 square feet, you can have a 4,000 foot building there as well. And I think we're getting out of the residential realm of things, personally.
I think it's a good point. I don't know. It seems kind of arbitrary to set an amount. I'm much more interested in the height. But I would concur with Ken if others do. I totally agree with what he says. It's we live in a city, and there's certain standards we want to abide by, and that's why you moved to the city, and that doesn't bother me. The height issue, we have in the northwest corner of town, a two-story facility or oversized outbuilding, and I think it's very unappealing. And I'm interested in maintaining the height issue of not being higher than the primary resident. Before, I think I said 18 feet, and I don't know which was it ever was higher.
Actually, the restriction in the code was 30 feet for any structure. So, yeah, residents are, there wasn't any differential between accessory structures and primary residents. So, they could be the maximum height allowed in the code.
Well, there's some structures higher than 30 feet in this community.
Well, and it's also the method of measurement. You actually, under the code, measure to the average height of the highest gable rather than the top of the roof. So and there are some unique characteristics to the measurement issue.
Well, I hope we can come to some kind of compromise on that. I would be interested in entertaining the minimum square footage or the maximum square footage. Ken presented it if we can get a majority. I'm much more interested in the height restriction.
Would you be opposed to bringing it down to like 35% or 40%, and then you'd have to still come back to the council?
Yeah.
I mean, that way you are restricting it to a point, but then at least it's by circumstance.
So Daryl's 45% pretty common in most communities is how they do that?
Well, actually, your code currently has a restriction of 35%, but as it went through the Planning Commission process, the feeling was if you're restricting the height, that there was some advantages to allowing for some additional coverage on the lot to be able to make the building a little larger in the footprint, but not as tall and be more compatible with that residential character. So the recommendation changed to 45%. But your code currently does provide a restriction of 35%. So we're giving up one and taking the other.
So is council interested in bringing it back to 35% or leaving that part alone?
I'll split the difference of 40%.
Doesn't make a difference.
What if you have a fifth wheel trailer, takes probably 11 feet to get it under a door. So you put a 3 and 4 pitch roof on top of that. What are you going to get for the height of a standard house, a 1,200 square foot home?
Yeah, if you're at a, let's say, a 14 or 15 foot door, 14 foot door probably is what you would have for a motor home or a fifth wheel, something in that neighborhood. You're going to exceed the height of a standard pitch rambler style house. So it would be very difficult to park undercover a fifth wheel or a motorhome with an air conditioning unit on top under those circumstances. And so you'd either have to seek relief from the council for those situations, or you would need to have some projection on your house above the typical one story. So there are circumstances that aren't always going to work.
But you can ask for relief for that?
For relief, yes.
Okay, under this. Okay.
And that's the only problem I have is that height requirement. In the past we've set some ordinance on restricting RV parking. And we've kind of pushed that group, you know, we put some more regulations on them. Now we're telling them that they're going to have more regulations on where they can park those and how, if they can't build a cover under their own property. That's going to be big enough to store.
Well, I consider the standard of the community, the standard of the neighborhood is way more important than the 0.5% that have motorhomes that want to store in a town. And there's just limitations, and we've discussed these. With the expansion on the south end of town with no alleys and houses 10 feet apart, we said, yes, people will not be able, if the neighbor puts a fence up to their boundary line, you cannot get a boat or a car into the backyard. That's the standard. That's the limitations. And I don't think if we have a bunch of residents with the normal roof line and somebody wants to come in because they have a motorhome and stick out like a sore thumb to store their motorhome, I don't think that's compatible. And I don't think it's necessary. They chose to live there. They chose to live in town. There's standards they have to go by.
I think it's also important to point out that when it comes to motorhomes and fifth wheels and large travel trailers, you do allow them to be parked in residential sites. There are some restrictions as to where they can park, but we're speaking specifically towards covering those now under this ordinance. And in many communities, I won't say most, but in many communities, that's where storage facilities came into being, is because there was a restriction for that type of covered parking for those large vehicles, and they needed to go off-site in the storage facilities in order to accommodate those. So it's not uncommon to have that occurrence in a residential city setting.
Okay. Do I hear a motion of any kind, or we want to wait on this? What would the council like to do?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'd move to accept this with the changes that the change to A, that the detached accessory does not exceed the size and height of the primary dwelling, and that no more than 40% of the lot may be covered by buildings.
Do I hear a second? Okay, do I hear another motion?
I make a motion that we accept this with the total area of the, regarding a detached accessory does not exceed the size and height of the primary dwelling and keep B intact with 45%.
Would council like to wait on this? Think about it some more? Since we're not getting a second?
Second. Vote anyway.
What's that?
I said I'll second it, okay, so we can vote.
Oh, okay. Oh, we can pass it to next week, too, or in 2 weeks. Would you like to wait? Is that people feel they'd like to wait a little bit on this and think about it?
I think we should do some more research on the height versus the percentage.
Okay.
And keep digging for happy medium.
Now, we have a second, though, don't we, now? Never mind, we have
wait
to move forward.
Wait a minute.
I can make that. If Mr. Garcia wishes to make a his motion will take precedence.
I motion to table
the
second.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Ken Johnson? Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor, raise your hand so I know. For tabling the motion. 4, 5, okay. Opposed? 2. Okay, then we'll table the motion. We'll bring it back to you next in 2 weeks. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daryl. Okay, ordinance amending OMC Chapter 12.16, private use of city fire hydrants. Amen.
As Councilmember Ford has said, we live in the city and we have standards, and we're going to talk about another standard issue tonight, and that is the private use of city fire hydrants. At our last meeting at the workshop, we discussed the need for an increase in a deposit, a monthly fee, depending on the size of the meter, 1 inch or 3 inch, $300 or $500, an increase in a monthly fee of $30 to $50, and the $30 used to be a one-time fee, and we're asking that the council approve a $50 per month rental fee. Basically, those are the items that we discussed, and of course, the deposit is returnable. And if it's not returned, you are deemed to have purchased the meter with a 15% upcharge for the city cost. But one little piece that we added since the last meeting, you'll notice in your on your ordinance, is we've added a sentence or four words: utility bill is paid in full. We're trying to address the council's concern about how do we make sure that they're returned before they give out the deposit. And so we just added utility bills paid in full. So the sentence would read, upon return of the city's property and inspection of the property, to ensure that it is intact and in full working order, and utility bills paid in full, the deposit shall be returned to the user by a check issued by the city finance department. So we did add that. I hope that clears up the concern that was expressed. The other issue that we didn't really dwell on a lot was the prohibition for use of privately owned meters. And we currently have some individuals that use privately owned meters. The problem there, remember, is accountability of city water. And some cities do allow that, others don't. If we allow one person to use a private meter, we have to allow everybody to use a private meter. So we're asking that the council just prohibit the use of private meters.
Questions for Eamon? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve OMC Chapter 12.6, private uses of city fire hydrants?
I make that motion.
Second.
Okay, Mark Snyder first, Gina second. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Unfinished business. Anybody have any unfinished business? I think yours would be new, I think, if you're talking about. Okay, new business? Ken?
I don't know if this would be unfinished business or new business.
Whichever.
We had some discussion here. Meeting that Well, actually, before that, we had a meeting in December to have the city look into the Sand Hill Crane Festival and see what we could do to help out, not necessarily taking over, but just to help out. So we heard that they were not going to have it for the year 2011. And there was some discussion even with the committee, whether yes or whether no, or what they wanted to do. So us as a committee, we got together and we hashed out some of the problems that they had, and we tried to work with them to see what we could do to help them out and see if we could get this thing on board and going again. I think it's a very worthwhile thing, and it's something that we've committed as a, not only as a Sand Hill Crane committee itself, but I think the whole community has got involved in this thing, and it's related to everybody in the community. So what I would like to propose, we have committed to help them somewhat on the committee itself and get the thing launched and on board. But in doing that, I think we've probably added some extra expense and a few things I think is going to be on. Anyway, we've got some added expenses and they want some brochures, and I would like to propose that we set aside, I think, about $5,000 out of our tourism fund to help them out, to get this thing launched, get it moving and whatnot. They may not spend that amount of money, but at least it's there, and we won't have to come back to council asking for more money. So, want me to make that a motion, or how do you want to discuss it first?
Well, let's discuss, I guess.
Expenditure of funds requires a motion.
Correct. Any more discussion on that? Or you can make a motion, Ken, if you want to.
I would propose to make a motion to set aside $5,000 for tourism account for the additional expense and whatnot for Sand Hill Crane Festival for the year 2011.
Do we have a second?
Point of order. Mr. Whitaker, I believe on parliamentary rules of order, a motion cannot be introduced that is not on the agenda without going through some special procedure.
I would have to defer to your local council rules. There actually is no requirement that it be on the agenda for a motion to be made. If your local rules require that, I don't recall a local rule, but I don't have that in my future.
We're going by Robert's rules of order, correct?
Well, to the extent the problem with Robert's rules is they were made for large community meetings, and you have to remember that Robert's rules, even though the council wants to use them, they can't interfere with the ability of a council member to come here and conduct the city business pursuant to state law. I mean, that's part of the reconsideration stuff and whatnot that's in Robert's rules really doesn't fully apply to city councils, because council members can come in and make motions every meeting. So, but we have the rules here. We'll look.
Just another point, we can continue whatever they decide. I was in at 4:30 today and this wasn't in there. So this is, you know, when we come in at before 7 o'clock, that's the first I've seen of this.
Just for clarification, that was about the time the city received at 4:30, 4:35.
Okay.
You're right, we didn't have.
No, I'm not blaming staff.
Yeah,
no, I'm just saying.
I didn't see it till tonight. But you're right, it did come in.
Thank you.
don't have a restriction in the council rules.
So you're saying what Ken did is okay?
Yes, it would be permitted.
Okay, just want to make sure. Okay, we had a first with Ken Kaler. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, Ken Johnson seconded. Any discussion?
So is this in addition to the 9,000 that's already budgeted?
Yes, it would be.
Or they currently got 7,000. A little bit, the brochures, asking them how currently the San Diego Korean Festival publishes, I think, you might help me out, is Will still here? About 2,300 brochures.
Actually, we're going with 3,000.
Going with this year?
Yes.
So there was a request to up those brochures because they were just running out about at 2,300. So there was a request to publish some more brochures, and that's where the additional is there. And to me, the advertisement portion of it's going to come. I believe the Sand Hill Crane Festival, we were able to help work it out so they could get this going on again. But in the meantime, the UP Press has picked up the stories. Unfortunately, stories traveled in the Tri-City Herald, the Seattle Times, saying that the Crane Festival has been canceled. So I think there's going to need to be some additional advertising done to let the people know that, no, this is not canceled. It is back on schedule, back on track.
And the city is not running the Sand Hill Crane Festival. They have a committee that does that. We helped them in a couple areas that they needed help in, making some phone calls and getting some people lined up, but that's about as far as the city is going to be. You'll see us start to back out because they're on board now and they're rolling. So, you know, and that's, they're requesting some help as far as what Ken had just shared, Councilmember Ken, so Johnson. So this is not a city where we're deeply involved in this, so. Okay, any, Mark?
I adamantly disagree with this funding. They've got money from the tourism fund that was decided in a fair and equitable way. We're affecting all these other groups that could come in with some excuse and want more money. We have a tourism fund. It's not a bottomless pit. We've dispersed that in a fair and equitable way. It is what it is. The problem they got into with the papers saying it's on, it's off, it's on, that was totally their own. When they canceled this, they never came to council, they never consulted us, they never let us know, ask our opinion. It was just bam, point blank, we got it, Sand Hill Crane Festival's canceled. So they've dug themselves into this. And to me, if we want to get the word out that the Sand Hill Crane Festival is on, we do it in the press release and save ourselves $3,900. And if we keep running out of brochures every year, well, there should be a budget item for that. That's not last minute problem, that an emergency that we need to fund. If that's happening every year, that's should have been broached earlier. So I want to support it. But to come in now, all we're doing is set a precedent that if a group delays things, then they're going to come back to us and get more money to bail themselves out. And I think that's a poor precedent to set.
Well, when we sat up here as a council, we all agreed to not let this thing die. I can't believe for a minute that we didn't think it was going to not cost monetary. When you have something almost left for dead and you try and take it back up. We all sat here and agreed that if this thing goes away, a fellow loses valuable money.
Mm-hmm.
A heck of a lot more than $3,900.
What was the amount we had figured, Eamon? I can't remember, the last 5 years?
It was $45,000.
No, the total that's been brought into our income.
Roger.
Roger.
Okay. That's who it was.
Roger Crew had an estimate, and the economic impact to the city of Othello was almost $1.8 million over a 5-year period.
So.
And So, you know, we're at a point now where we stuck a rope out to help them, and now we're pulling it back a little bit. I mean, I know for one that it was going to cost some money from somewhere. Anybody that's sitting up here that didn't think it was, you're foolish. Things cost money. I mean, you got to put it out there, get it.
Okay.
Well, I'm one of the members that sat up here, and I'm full of it apparently, because when they said it's canceled, I thought, okay, there's going to be $7,000 in the fund, the tourism fund that's not being spent by the Sandhill Crane Festival that other people can use to promote their events and get more people here. And I didn't, so that money, we didn't spend that money or take it away from them. It was available to them. It's still available to them. So, no, I did not see it costing me $5,000 more for them to put the event on. Part of the problem, as I understand it, is there's not enough volunteers and it's too big. So downsize it a little bit. Don't spend so much money on it. See who comes up without the advertising. But to me, I'm totally, we're on polar ends, Charles. I thought there'd be money left over because it was going to be downsized and we're just going to do what we can this year and see who shows up, and then next year we'll revamp it up.
You know, my biggest thing was that I don't know what their budget was the last 9 months prior to us receiving information that it wasn't going to happen. How much did they expense already in the process trying to get this function going? So, you know, those variables all have to be taken into consideration. I mean, obviously they didn't sit idle for 9 months. They did something.
Well, it's a volunteer organization, though. That doesn't mean they spent money. I mean, this is just a piece of their income that they charge admission, and there's, you know, they collect money. So if they need to charge more admission to pay for more brochures, then that's up to their organization. It's not for the taxpayers to come in, swoop in now. It's the same thing I told you about the Chamber of Commerce. I'd rather use the money to buy playground equipment. Although, technically, we can't use the tourism fund for that, but.
To me, this is one of the activities that helps fund this utility tax the most. This is the time when our hotels and motels actually say they have the most occupancy in their rooms. A lot of our businesses profit from it a lot more because of all this is new money that's being brought in. Most of the people that come to this event come from out of town. They're bringing new money in to town. This ain't like some of the other activities that we have that it's the community people circulating the money back in, but like I say, it's new money. And the more people we could get into this town, we're going to see a lot more money come back in our hotel motel tax, and it will actually help the fund in the future.
Go ahead, Ken.
I think if you look at that motel fund, Mike could probably back me up on this a little bit. I think we ended up with a little extra money in that fund that we didn't realize that we would have at the end of the year. So we're not really taking away from anything. It's being funded for a purpose to do tourism. And that's what this is all about, is tourism. That fund is tourism. That's where it's supposed to go. And that's what we're using it. It may be a little additional from what we originally planned or they planned, or under the circumstances, I think it's still going to be used for the same purpose, whether it's a Sandhill Crane Festival or you have a special ball playoff here or a ball game playoff, you know. If you need that special thing, that's what that money's for. Let's use it for that.
I agree with you on that point, but that should have been decided up front last year when we said we should have said this event brings in more heads on the beds. Let's give them more money. I mean, the Car Classic Club, the rodeo could come in the same thing. Give me $5,000 more, I'll get more people here. So you're just lining them up. If I was one of these other groups, I would be offended that you disperse this and then a club comes in at the last minute and wants more money. That would hurt my feelings.
Okay, we had a first and a second. So any more discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. All right, that passes then. Any more new business? Okay, mayor's announcements. The mayor's luncheon is this Wednesday at the Othello Senior Center. The menu is taco salad, rice, bread, and pudding. Hope to have some of the council members come if they want to. Public disclosure statements are due by April 15th for all elected officials. The Teamsters Union mediation is January 27th.
Excuse me.
The Teamsters Union mediation is January 27th at 9 a.m. in room 3. So council members Darrow, Deaver, and Kaler. The Sand Hill Crane Festival is back on track thanks to council members Kaler, Johnson, and Spohr.
Excuse me. Cross my name off that one, I guess.
And then 9 a.m. on Tuesday, which is tomorrow, is the audit exit briefing. Is any of the council members coming? Okay, you're one. We're just making sure we don't have four quorums, so we'll have to have two meetings then. Is it just one then? Okay, then this meeting's adjourned. Boy.